Okay, everybody, welcome back once again to Tech Gumbo. I'm Haggai Davis II, along with Haggai Davis III, and we'd like to welcome you into our show where we talk about all things past, present, and future that have to do with technology, but we like to do so in an interesting, topical, and digestible way without a lot of geek speak or acronyms. We just want to talk about tech that's important to us and important to you.
Speaking of important to us, Cardinal Capital. They are our sponsor for this episode. To business owners and CEOs everywhere, hopefully you have a good relationship with your bank. Even if you do, though, sometimes you face other challenges, such as a need to consolidate debt, a want to level out your cash flow, or a desire to buy new equipment because you're in growth mode. If this describes you, give Cardinal Capital a call, whatever your need or challenge. They have over 4,000 lenders where they source commercial capital for business clients. Chris, Gary, and Rob at Cardinal Capital have a passion for business and they want you to succeed. When you meet with Cardinal Capital, they get to know you and your business so they can present your needs to the lending institution that will best fit your unique situation. In short, they go after money for your business. They translate your business into what's important to banks, and they are good at it. Depending on what the deal is, no matter how complicated or straightforward, they will help you maximize your profitability while setting your business up for success. They will find the best solution for your situation, all while being fun and easy to deal with. For more detailed information, visit their website at cardinalcap.net, call 225-308-3700, or email info@cardinalcap.net.
Okay, so, you know, I thought about it the other day here at Tech Gumbo. We're beginning our eighth year on radio. We're second year as a podcast. Thought it'd be a good idea just to say thank you to the listeners. Those of you who've been with us for a very long time, thank you very much. If you're new to the show, thank you for checking us out.
Absolutely. We are just tickled that every week you guys tune in and listen to us because we just have a blast having a conversation, sitting around learning about and talking about technology.
So that being said, thank you very much. Let's get on with another helping of Tech Gumbo. Wanted to start off with a story we found. A company called Mimecast did a survey of approximately 1,000 cybersecurity professionals and found that 80% of them have been targeted by ransomware over the past 2 years, and the average payout was almost $6 million.
So there was a lot inside of the study, and we want to take it apart because there's several really interesting pieces of information. The first one was the payout was more than $6 million in the U.S. In Canada, it was only $5 million. In the U.K., it was less than one. And then in South Africa, Australia, and Germany, it was $250,000.
That's just mind-blowing. The fact that you're talking 25 times more money to pay out ransomware in the U.S., than in Germany, Australia, and South Africa.
We sat there and we thought about why this could be. And I don't have a great explanation for this. If you were to tell me Canada was 5 million, the US was 6 million, all right, that's within close enough. But to be off by more than a factor of 10, more than a factor of 20, that's weird.
Yes. Another disturbing portion of this article went on to say that less than half of the respondents to this, so roughly 500 out of 1,000 cybersecurity professionals that were surveyed, less than half had offsite backups of their data.
Yeah, that's the wrong number. It should be almost 100%, if not 100%.
It should be 100% flat, period. No questions asked. If you're a cybersecurity professional and you don't back up your data, what the hell are you doing?
I do not have answers to that. And to go along with that, 40% said that if they believe they would lose their jobs if a ransomware attack was successful. If you are a cybersecurity professional and you run an IT firm and you get attacked, that doesn't say good things about your quality of your work.
No, it really doesn't. And it's really disappointing that people in my industry have that kind of a laissez-faire attitude about it. Just that, oh, well, you know, Okay. No. No. You can't do that.
Yeah, that's not great. Because a lot of these people reported interruptions to their business. 42% said they experienced disruptions, 30% said they lost revenue, and 20% said they lost customers. So it was literally costing them. It wasn't just, oh, a bump in the road. This had meaningful consequences. Hopefully they did something. Hopefully they learned here.
But as an IT company, we go around imploring, or preaching, begging our clients, telling them they need to do offsite backup of their data to protect themselves from things like ransomware. Because it's not if, it's when you get it. And you've got to be able to protect yourself with backups of your data so we can recreate everything real fast for you so you're not dead in the water or out of business in a short time. This is just mind-numbing. It's frustrating to see a story like that.
Yeah, it really is shocking.
Another story we found that Microsoft has said their Windows 11, they're going to ditch the black screen of death and return to the blue screen of death.
For some reason, whenever Windows 11 launched, they didn't have blue screen of death and it was black screen of death. Everybody knows that the color of the screen turns whenever everything is on fire is blue. Whenever your computer poops itself, it turns blue. And I don't know why they changed that. And I'm glad they changed it back.
Well, it's been that way since Microsoft began. When it crashed, when Windows began, I should say, not just DOS, but when Windows began and it crashed, the blue screen of death got its name in the 90s. I mean, this isn't, you don't change something that everyone has come to love to hate like that.
Oh, it's iconic. You know, it's whenever something, a piece of technology like this goes back 25 or more years, I don't get it. I don't get why they thought Windows 11 was the time to change it in the first place. But maybe if you're going to call it something cool, like a green or orange, but like black is such a generic screen of death color. No, keep the tradition here.
And the term blue screen of death is just, it's so like, it's like saying I want a Coke or I want a Band-Aid or I need a Kleenex. The blue screen of death is your own thing, and you tried to give up on that. I mean, you can't. It's tattooed on you. Sorry.
Oh, it's absolutely just a thing inside of the tech industry. And my guess is that this was something that happened like deep in a tech department, and then the marketing team heard about it and was like, no, we're going back to that. Moving on. The Department of Education and the Department of Homeland Security have gotten together to release some updated guidelines on cybersecurity for public schools in the country.
And they got some senators involved to help back this whole thing. A couple of senators, most from the Democrat side of the aisle, but there's some Republicans who've been backing this as well. They're saying, hey, you schools, you K-12s out there, you need to get out and take care of that cybersecurity and update yourselves.
Yeah, because the last time the Department of Education had updated its cybersecurity guidance was 2010. And things have changed in the past decade.
Yes, probably it's a good idea to update your specific guidance and practices more often than the census comes out.
Yeah, given that ransomware didn't exist in 2010, the idea that you need to protect against it now, you really should have that somewhere in your document. So this is especially because it hadn't been updated to reflect anything going on with remote learning because of the pandemic. So many schools have introduced some form of Zoom classes or things like that. You need standardized guidance across the board to deal with this huge change.
This is one of those where, come on, boys and girls, let's catch up. I mean, I all of a sudden I hear myself getting frustrated with these first three stories, but it's like, come on, you can't just stay that way. You've got to keep up with the times.
Well, my guess is that the Department of Education doesn't have a cybersecurity division. They have a whole bunch of divisions, but this is probably the first time that education has really thought about how does cybersecurity impact us? Because I guarantee in the year 2000, no one asked that question. And in the year 2010, it was like maybe the first person said we should like add this as an addendum, but now we're getting to the point wherever everybody needs to be thinking about cybersecurity as built into their plans.
So we found another story about the cost of upgrading your phone is actually more expensive than you might think.
Yeah, this one, you know, we talk a lot about how cell phones have kind of stagnated in the past couple of years. And so the question that we have for you is that whenever you're thinking about going out and upgrading your phone, is it really worth the money that you're going to be spending on it?
Yeah, there was a story, and they quoted Susie Orman. She's a noted economist who talks about saving money for the future and everything. And she'd made a comment about if you, instead of buying that new phone every year and you save that $12 a month, that over 30 years, it would be the equivalent of adding $25,000 to your savings account. And that's fine and good, but the question really becomes, do you need to upgrade your phone every year? Or if you went 2 years or 3 years, after 3 years, okay, maybe it's time to upgrade your phone.
Right, and I think that's the bigger point here, is that cell phones are a decent size investment. And so if you're using it a lot, like you want to get good value out of your phone, you want to be enjoying it, you want it to be useful. But at the same time, you know, if you can make it last, if you have that just cover on it, which gets you the extra 6 months, gets you the extra year out of that case, out of that phone, that adds up over time. Whenever you think about, so we've had cell phones for smartphones for a decade now, and probably going to have them for a while going forward, probably a good idea to protect them.
Absolutely. And so, you know, again, if you're using currently a flip phone and you're ready to leap forward into that smartphone, okay, great, go out there and get one. But if you've got the iPhone 12, you're not going to see anything by going to the iPhone 13 other than maybe one more camera lens on the back of your phone. It's just not that big going from the Samsung, whatever number it is now, to the next Samsung number, you're not going to see a whole lot of innovation that's worth dropping an extra $900 just to say you got the latest and greatest.
Yeah. You know, whenever I got my first Galaxy, I had the Galaxy 2, and then I went from the 2 to the 5. And I was like, oh, this is wild. And then I went from the 5 to the 8. And I was like, oh, this is a huge difference. But now they're on like the 11 or the 12. And I'm like, meh, I don't see it. And so, you know, that's the question, is that money that you're spending on these new phones, you know, maybe think about, is it really worth that upgrade?
And the answer probably is maybe not. So we found a very fascinating story about a company. This is a startup company that wants to throw satellites into orbit using a giant centrifuge.
Yeah, they have said that whole rocket booster stuff is overrated. We are just going to sling it. We are going to launch it from a centrifuge, and that's going to be our method of putting stuff into space. No more explosions.
Yeah, they talk about how the majority of the weight of the rocket is in the fuel. And so if you get rid of the need for all that fuel, then, you know, you don't need, you know, that big, huge rocket with the big blast and everything. We're just going to, so they've got this little gadget, or not a little, it's about 165-foot tall centrifuge that's standing up on its side, and it spins, and it gets enough pressure built up, and then it releases that satellite, because it's not a rocket. Ballistic missile, and it just, it can go on up there into space, and it does have enough fuel to where it can maneuver around a little bit once it's in space, but only a little bit.
Yeah, you know, it's designed to carry about 450 pounds, which is kind of on the smaller end for payload. You're really only looking to launch stuff like the smaller telescopes. The Starlink telescopes are going to be in this category, but most communication satellites are in the thousands of pounds. And so you're really kind of in the niche category here. But, you know, if you don't have to have the rocket fuel, which is really expensive, and you can cut down on the cost of getting stuff into space. Now, one thing to point out, you're not going to launch a human into space with this. You would turn them into mush. And yes. We like our people intact. So this is strictly to send inanimate objects upwards.
To low Earth orbit at that. This is not going to the middle Earth or even high Earth orbit. This is low Earth only. So you're not going to send anything to the moon on this thing for certain. Even an inanimate object, just a little ballistic missile, is not going to get the moon. You just can't get that far without having an actual rocket doing something for you.
A cool idea.
Speaking of satellites and what you should not be doing with them, the Russian government decided this week to take one of their ground-based missiles and blow up a satellite.
Yeah, it was likely not intentional, just because of how dumb this is. NASA administrator called it irresponsible and destabilizing because the astronauts in the space station, one of them being a Russian, had to get into the launch pods because they were worried if one of these pieces of debris hits the ISS that they'd have to eject from the space station.
The Russians, with their anti-satellite missile, blew apart one of their own satellites, creating this debris field that's got 1,500 trackable devices or pieces, trackable pieces. To be trackable, it's got to be a good size hunk of metal. And then there's thousands and thousands of untrackable pieces whistling around at 17,500 miles an hour, looking for a target to find.
Yeah, the good news is space is really big and that most of these things will deorbit pretty quickly. And so it looks like the danger is most likely passed from this, but you don't want to make a habit of just blowing up satellites near space stations. That's a great way to make Swiss cheese.
Yeah, because, you know, you said most of this stuff will probably deorbit. But it only takes one or two pieces not to deorbit to start taking out other satellites. And then all of a sudden you have the big, huge cloud circling the whole Earth that no rocket can ever go up into space again because there's going to be too much debris fields floating overhead. And you know, the movie Gravity comes to mind.
Yeah, I think it's Kessler syndrome is that exact fear. And so it's unlikely that we get to that point in time. But again, we shouldn't be taking steps to accelerate that. We should be doing what we can to not end up there.
The first incident like this was China did this back in 2007, using a kinetic missile to destroy one of their satellites. And it created thousands of pieces of debris, some of which are still circulating the Earth.
Yep. India has done it as well. They did it in 2019. It's just almost a rite of passage to blow up your own satellite and hope that it doesn't hit anything important.
Like the space station with people from each one of these countries on this International Space Station. I don't understand the mindset of we've had ballistic missiles. We know we can launch a cruise missile and put it in through a window of a building 15,000 miles away from here. Why do we have to go prove that we can blow up a satellite?
We in the U.S. can do that.
We as in humans on Earth.
My guess is that the U.S. military isn't sharing those technologies with the Chinese and with the Russians. Those are more closely guarded, and so they need to prove to us that they can do that as well.
Yes, and so the State Department strongly condemned this and calling it dangerous, reckless, and irresponsible. And the Russians probably went, okay.
It's hopefully Iran doesn't do it next. Hopefully, you know, we don't think North Korea can do it. They just don't seem like they have that capability to put a satellite in space in the first place. But it's just not not a trend that we want to keep going. So that's what we'd look to not have happen in the future.
Correct. But what we do want to do is we want to thank General Informatics for sponsoring our show. General Informatics is an information technology firm with a mission to make our clients even more successful through the best use of technology. From the beginning, we have maintained our commitment to meeting the growing needs of our clients through continuous innovation. With over 20 years of experience and a team of 120 plus engineers, technicians, programmers, and designers, GI has evolved to become the leading IT partner of businesses, schools, and government agencies. Our managed services teams can run your digital infrastructure or support your team on an on-demand basis, letting you focus on your business strengths. This has become a proven formula, so proven that 98% of our clients continue to do business with us year after year. The true testament to GI's success, however, has been the strategic support to our clients' growth. Whether you need IT services, new technology, or just have a question, visit us on the web at geninf.com.
If you enjoyed our show today, we are here on Talk 107.3 FM every Saturday at 4 p.m., and the show reruns Sundays also at 4 p.m. If you missed any part of the show or you'd like to hear us as a podcast, check us out on almost every podcast platform, including iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, Google Music, Amazon, and more. When you're there, be sure to subscribe so you get notified every time we post a new episode. If you like our show, you have any suggestions, or have a question, let us know via text 225-255-0431. If we use your question, you will get a Tech Gumbo mug sent to you for free. Thank you for listening to Tech Gumbo.